Hello and welcome to the first podcast of 2023. I hope you're all well rested and ready for the year ahead. This is episode 4 and I was lucky enough to catch up with Neil Eastwood, workforce guru, to talk about rural recruitment and retention of staff. Hello Neil, thanks for coming in to speak to me today. I wonder if we can start by telling everybody a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, okay, so thanks very much for inviting me along. So my name's Neil Eastwood and I have based in the UK, although I'm recording this in Australia and travel to Australia regularly and around the world. So the particular obsession I have is how do we find and keep a caring workforce in all sorts of settings, but particularly rural and remote is a big, big challenge. How do we find those people and how do we keep them? And with demand increasing, it's a huge issue. So I was originally a director at a business with 10,000 home care staff, with many, you know, rural and remote areas that we were covering. And we had a very high staff turnover. So that was the trigger for me saying, how can we solve this? And I've spent so many years studying it. I certainly don't know all the answers, but it resulted in a book called Saving Social Care in 2017, which I'm now writing the second edition of. And then I created an app called Care Friends, which was specifically trying to deal with the trickle we were getting from employee referral programs when I thought we could get much more. So this is trying to use our own workforce to find people who they know are going to love the job. And that's an alternative, if you like, to the standard ways of recruiting. I think we've all got a bit lazy with the way we try and recruit. And as the labour market's tightened up, we simply have to change the way we do things.
So can you tell us just how your Care Friends operate?
So Care Friends is an app that care workers can download on their phone. They can do that in Australia or the UK or Ireland, and soon in the Netherlands and Germany. And it awards points, and a point is a dollar. It awards points for the progress of your friend going through the recruitment channel. So what we're trying to do is remind people and make it fun and interesting for people, for employees to recommend friends, not just friends that they can think of immediately, but also get them becoming recruiters in the local community. So thinking, who do I know who has family care experience, has emotional maturity, who would be great at this job? And I can earn points instantly by them inquiring, by them having a successful interview, and them obviously starting work and staying a long time. And I think very importantly, what we also have on the app is something called the New to Care bonus. So we're trying to grow capacity in any area, in any system. So say, for example, Murray Bridge and all of the kind of remote areas around, we need to add care work capacity, more paid care workers, rather than swap them from one role to the other. So the app rewards you with double points if you bring someone new into the system.
Okay, so what does it mean for providers? So how do providers start to implement the system of the Care Friend?
So they have an online portal. It's really simple. They upload the jobs, their current vacancies to the portal. And that's not shared, for example, on an internet job board. That's just going on their own, the app of their own staff. So they upload the jobs and they upload the staff contact details. And then the system invites the staff to download the app. It's their choice. They download the app, put in their phone number, and they're on. They can see all of these different jobs available. And then they can share a job with three taps with a friend via text message or WhatsApp or on social media like Facebook. And then as people apply, and every 15 job shares at the moment generates a new candidate, then they're automatically collecting points and being told what's going on. And then all the way through the process. And it also has a facility that the employer can give bonus points for good work, for achieving accomplishments, you know, 2 years service or whatever. And they can also be rewarded for picking up extra shifts or helping out in some other way. So that helps retention in two ways. One way, we're bringing in employee referrals and they stay typically three times as long as someone who's come from a job board. And then anyone, even if you never refer, but you have the app, can earn points for other things. And those two mechanisms work really well together.
How do providers get hold of the app?
So we have a Care Friends Australia operation, as I mentioned. So it's carefriends.com.au, and they can then pay for a license for a year for the app. And then all they have to do then is just fund the points for whatever budget they want to give for an employee referral. And probably typically across Australia, the budget's probably ends up being around $400, but doesn't have to be. And so then that's, yeah, it's off they go. And then what they'll find is many, many of their staff, become their best recruiters.
So let's go back to this question that I asked you before, see if you can answer it in a different way. So what are the required skills to look for and embed in recruitment strategies? And how can you market this differently to attract people? So we've talked about the app, because this is a completely different kind of marketing to how people would normally do it. What other recruitment strategies can we embed in this rural area that is going to help our staff recruitment and retention?
Yeah. Well, I think the important thing is to be very clear about who you're trying to find. And it's not a lot of people, but it's people with emotional maturity and those sort of volunteering and giving values and a calling for care. And so there are many ways of finding those people, even in what might appear to be, very sparsely populated areas. And you can use online methods, and I'm sure, social media and so on you could use. But really, I think the opportunities lie in using networks and also partners and community leaders and getting the word out through multiple ways, through these channels, and also thinking about the patterns of life in any rural area. Where would people go to fill up with fuel for their car? Where would they go to get food? Where would they meet? And obviously, churches play a role potentially, or, sort of faith settings. And there are lots of partner organizations out there making, embedded in the local community and really would like to help. So it's about getting that community outreach working really well, I think, in those sorts of rural areas.
So what is the secret to success when employing to support retention for roles that require the physical and emotional maturity?
So I think with retention, if you focus too much on the money, you're missing a trick, a big trick. So yes, people should be paid, perhaps more than they are. But really what people seek is appreciation for the role that they do. And there are two aspects to this. There's appreciation, there's recognition. They're two slightly different things. Appreciation is recognizing the person's intrinsic value that they bring to the role. And recognition is often looking at performance or results in some way. And both of those things should be used. But certainly I would say if you can bake in regular appreciation, and that might be a face-to-face well done, or it might be, posting a letter home to the family or to the family home saying, we really appreciated the work you've done. And I think what that also does is other family members see that and realize what a great job that their spouse or partner or mum or dad or whatever is doing. And then they might spread the word, and certainly they won't be nagging them to say, oh, why are you doing that job? You could be paid more money doing something else. So it's all about enriching these connections and relationships that people have. So an aged care worker, for example, or someone working in the community, you have to look at the relationships. The relationship that they have with the person they're supporting is often a very, very powerful thing. What are weaker often is the connection or the support from the family, who often are unaware of the contribution that they're making, or particularly with supervisors as well, where you find sometimes, they don't perhaps use, they're not as supportive as they could be. So in my mind, it's all about relationships, and because it's emotional labor, we need to understand what people are getting out of the job and making sure we're just trying to enrich that. And so that means not only more appreciation, but also understanding the kind of calling for care and the spiritual element of a lot that a lot of people get out of it. So I would always talk to the staff to try and understand, why are you doing this job? What do you get out of it? Where do you want to go? And you can learn so much from your existing workforce. And sometimes we're on transmit too much and we don't listen.
Yeah. So In your book, there was quite a little bit of stuff about when your staff are leaving. So you've had a member of staff and you've had them for a number of years and they're leaving, about what you can do to encourage them to return. Do you think that that is more difficult in a rural area where there's less of a workforce to start with? You might have, as I told you in my original, a number of homes in a small area. Do you think that can be difficult? Because it is, it's like poaching staff a little bit. So would you recommend that they would do it anyway, or would you say, well, you've got to look at your whole demographic before before you start sort of infringing on that?
Well, I mean, my view is that I would always recruit from people who've not currently got a job in the sector. Generally speaking, we want to grow capacity, so that would be my preference. Having said that, if someone leaves you, I think asking them to come back, if you would like them back, is a very legitimate way of. So it's a good recruitment source. So we know in the UK and in America, it's about a third. About 30% of people that you ask to come back will actually come back to you within 6 months. Now, why are they doing that? It's often if they've moved out of the sector, they've realized what they've just lost, which is that relationship with people and that familial feel that you get working in our sector rather than just a job, an admin job or some other job that doesn't have that element to it. So I think people who leave, often for more money, let's say, feel they've made a desperate mistake, but they're too bashful to ask to come back. So it's always a good idea to keep, the lines of communication open and say, how's it going? And, we would love to have you back. And certainly you find in many cases they will come back.
Yeah. Have you ever done that? Have you ever gone back to a job?
I have, I have once.
How did you find it?
No, it was nice to be back. It's like coming back to the family, like the prodigal son.
Yeah. I've done it once as well, and I was so relieved to go back.
And I
Yeah.
think people make mistakes, and I think, sometimes the grass, or rather people have to, they have to leave to see for themselves, to think, oh, I've got to make a move. And often it's silly little things that push them over the edge, and then they regret it. Or they're being pushed or nudged out by, other people in the family, for example, to say, oh, why are you working on social hours when, you could be doing something that suits the family more? And I
I mean,
think
I was going to say I was quite young and I did it purely for the money and it just wasn't worth it.
and that is often the case, is that it's driven by financial reasons and you realize there's more to life than that. And I think, it's a particular way of life in a rural area, which, really suits people. And the great thing about the work that you're offering is that it is in the community, it's embedded in the community. It's flexible work, it's giving back to the community. And a lot of people, say the older generation, maybe the kids have left home, maybe they've had the death of a partner or something like that, or they're divorced. Social care, aged care, or this kind of community role gives them back an awful lot of what they've lost.
And in my experience, they're more reliable. People over the age of 55 for me.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And they don't need as much direct supervision. Obviously, they have the emotional maturity. There are so many. I mean, obviously, wouldn't it be wonderful to have, a kind of army of younger under 25s, but it's just not practically going to happen. And I think, you have to look at your demographics in a rural area and say, I have to recruit from what I have here, because people are not going to drive in from Adelaide every day to do the job.
Yeah, even though potentially the government say they will. So with the changes that are happening, do you know about the changes that are happening in Australia at the moment?
Yeah, I'm aware of some of them. So the sort of star rating scheme, the kind of potential for worker registration, the kind of some of the more compliance issues that are coming out of the Royal Commission, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so for care, in-home care, at the moment is called Community at Home Care, but, you know, there's going to be all sorts of other acronyms that come along, I'm sure. In 2024, all of that is changing. So at the moment, you either have the community care and there are packages, and they are all about keeping people in their homes. So that's the kind of care that's going to be changing. So there's going to be different ways people can self-manage their funds. People will be able to choose their providers. You're going to be able to have a sole trader come along and do some of the work for you. So that's in things like, so for community care, it might be clearing gutters, gardening, help with shopping, going to appointments, that kind of everyday thing that keeps you in your own home. So they are the things that are going to be changing. So there's going to be lots of different employment avenues. I mean, we don't have to go into everyone with it. So for those employment avenues, there already aren't enough people for the work in some rural areas. So do you have any suggestions of what can be done to, yeah, encourage people who didn't even know that they wanted to work in this sector, can be sort of how we can be flagged up and they can sort of realize where they are at?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to present this job in a way that appeals to people, and the delivery mechanism is probably best to be another person in the community that they trust rather than an advert. And I think there's definitely a move towards more flexibility and more of a sort of portfolio kind of career of doing different things at, rather than one job. And I think employers often take some time to get their head around the fact that the workforce is expecting more flexibility. Now, one of the challenges we have is that it's difficult to work from home and do the job. You've kind of got to be with the clients you're supporting. And so we have to think of how can we introduce as much flexibility as we possibly can. And I think technology has a role in that as well. So I think there's an element here of sort of self-directed teams where you can create teams that support each other. So say, for example, I might be due to provide care in Lennox tomorrow, and suddenly my daughter needs me to take her somewhere or do something and I can't do it. Instead of going to the employer and saying, oh, I'm dropping out, I can't do that tomorrow, it's talking to the team I work with and trading, you know, with each other to help each other out and building a sense of community, how each person in the team supports each other. So I think there's some really quite clever mechanisms we can use, but it's all about human psychology and about, if we found the right people. The bedrock of all of this is finding those people who actually do care. And then I think it all gets much, much easier.
Mm. In the recruitment process, we've put out our adverts. Say they've only used the internet. So they've only got Indeed and they've got half a dozen. What weeds those people out? Because they're probably not suitable, but we don't actually know until, you know, we know more about them. So that's that whole recruitment process that from start to finish. What do you suggest is the best way to go about that?
So I think the first thing is, who are you putting in the top of the funnel? And you have control to some extent over, apart from walk-ins and kind of speculative applications, you know, you have control over the channels you use. So the higher the quality of the channel, employee referral being a great example, then the less you have dropouts through that and the wrong kinds of people. So the conversion rates can be 10 times, 20 times better than using, let's say, just job boards. So that's the first thing. And then I think the second thing is, what questions do you ask people? And I don't think we ask the right questions in many cases. I think often employers are using a photocopied set of interview questions from 1970. They have no idea why they're asking the questions. And so we have to build a relationship with people and understand what's their why. Why do they want to do the job? Can they do the job, or why do they want to do the job? And we can easily train in all of the skills to do the job. We just need people with the right values and motivation in the first place. So it's about the raw materials that you have. But often I find the employer's recruitment process is a big negative. So, for example, taking far too long to respond to somebody, or particularly important in a rural area, let's say you can't, they're not suitable and you just don't even reply to them at all. Well, they're going to say to their friend who might be suitable, don't bother applying to that provider. I never heard anything. And I think we have to be really careful as employers to protect our reputation as good employers in the local area, because people talk. So it's very important that you respond to people and you're courteous, even if they're not suitable. But if, for the example you gave, Lisa, I would say, then if you are focusing on those kind of active job seeker sources, then you're going to get an awful lot of wastage. So it's about changing the channels you use, not being panicky about, I don't have many applicants. It doesn't matter if they are high potential, because you're going to get a much better conversion rate.
Fantastic.
I'd like to thank Neil for his fascinating insights into workforce recruitment and retention. I hope you found it as educational as I did. Join me next time when we'll be talking about the new Volunteer Visitors Programme.